Welcome and greetings, career-minded superstars. You are listening to the exclusive Career Coach, your podcast for all things career. And I'm Lisa Edwards, the indispensable career coach for superstars just like you. Now let's dig into this week's topic, shall we? Hi there. I want to tell you about my webinars that are going to be coming up every month. I want you to check out my website and see what this month's webinar topic is and sign up. The format is going to be the same every month, even though the topics are going to change. It's going to be a huge variety of career-related topics. I'm going to give you a deep dive into content about that topic for about 30 minutes, and then you're going to have a chance for 30 minutes of Q&A in the chat box while I'm teaching you. You can ask me a question, and then if you're really brave, and I hope you will be, you can be volunteered to coach live on that month's topic. So you can raise your hand and I'll coach you. I want to give you that URL so that you can go to my website, see what the next topic is, and sign up. So go to go to my website at exclusivecareercoaching.com/webinar-sign-up. See what this month's topic is, see when and what time it is, sign up and get in there and participate with me. I look forward to having you there. Thanks. Hi there. My name is Lisa Edwards, and I'm the CEO of Exclusive Career Coaching, and I'm starting a brand new podcast. I'm super excited to talk to you guys about all things career management. So what the heck does that mean, right? Well, it's the obvious job transition stuff, like looking for a job. So you need a resume, you need a great LinkedIn profile, but you also need strategy. You need to know how to interview. You need to know where to look for jobs. If you hear me say nothing else in this first podcast, let me tell you that job boards are broken. And most people have figured that out if they've done any kind of a job search lately. What they don't know is what's the alternative. What else can I do? How can I look for a job in a way that is more effective? We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about strategies to maximize LinkedIn so that you can get the most out of it for your job search and career management goals. And we're going to be talking about managing your thoughts around all of these things. So how do you position yourself mentally in your thoughts so that you can get that next new job, you can get that promotion, you can get that plum project that you're looking to secure a lead on. So we're going to be talking about all of those kinds of things, and I'm super excited to bring that to you. I want to tell you a little bit about myself today, and then we're going to do a little bit of a high-level talk about the job search today, and then in future podcasts, I'm going to drill down on these topics and get real specific with you. I really want this to be interactive, so I encourage you to leave comments and questions. We're going to have time for Q&A. We're going to have lots of opportunity for you guys to interact with me. I really want to be essentially your job search coach. So please, interact and give me feedback. So who is this podcast primarily for? Well, let me tell you about who my primary audience is for in my private practice. I work primarily with sales and marketing folks. I call them superstars. So these are high achievers that are either in the mid-level of their career up through the executive ranks. And oftentimes these are folks whose perhaps they haven't landed in jobs that have been reflective of what they're capable of. And it has to do with how they have gone about getting those jobs and kind of a reactive mode to looking for jobs. So I work with my clients so that they can land in jobs that are equal to what they have to contribute so they can find the best fit for themselves. Having said that, I also work with all kinds of other clients because my sales and marketing clients send all kinds of folks to me. So really the sweet spot is for this podcast is anyone who's at that mid-level to upper level in your career, and you really want to take it to the next level. So who am I, right? Who the heck am I? My name again is Lisa Edwards, and I have about a background of more than 20 years of experience in higher education career services. So I really cut my teeth career management-wise in the higher education space. So helping college students figure out what they wanted to be when they grow up and how to get there, and how to launch their careers.
When I left higher education in 2011, I then started working on my business full time. I had had my business for some time before that. So what I have done since then is really built up a very strong practice around kind of, I call it the soup to nuts of career management. So everything from, I have some clients who come to me saying, I want to make a career shift. I want to be in a different career, but I don't know what that career is. And so we do some assessments and some coaching around that. My sweet spot really is the marketing piece, and which is the resume, cover letter, LinkedIn profile, as well as the job search coaching. So helping clients to plan and launch a targeted, proactive job search strategy that does not focus on job boards. And as part of that, I also do a lot of interview coaching. And then finally, I coach clients as they move into their new position so that they can position themselves for success in that first critical 90 days on the job. So that's a little bit about me. I also have, if we even go back further than the 20 years, so we're talking about, you know, when the earth was still cooling, I started out as a public school music teacher. I have an undergraduate degree in music education. And then after I left music education, I did corporate training for a while. As I mentioned, I have an undergraduate degree in music education, and then I have a master's degree in public administration. And really just everything in my career has been, I think, to prepare me for the spot that I'm in right now. So I'm really excited to share a body of knowledge and wealth with you guys and really hopefully help you take yourselves to the next level. So why am I podcasting? Well, I've written almost 100 blogs, and so I have a pretty prolific body of work out there in written form. I've also been published in about a half a dozen books, mostly about resume writing. And I see this as a way to reach a wider audience and also a different audience than my blogs reach. But they will certainly be complementary to one another so that there's consistency across those two medium. And I really, again, just want an opportunity to share my wealth of knowledge and hopefully in a little bit of a more interactive format with you guys than podcasting allows for. So that's a little bit about me, a little bit about what you can expect from this podcast. I anticipate that they will be about 30 minutes in length. My thought is that this is going to be something great for you to plug in on your daily commute. Hopefully you can get the information that you need and make good use of that downtime. So let's talk a little bit about, as I mentioned, I also want to cover in this podcast kind of a high level of the job search. And so I wrote a podcast a few years ago. I called it Job Search or Root Canal. And my thought was that there are a lot of people out there who would put job search in about the same category as a root canal in terms of how much they enjoy it and look forward to it. And my conclusion was that maybe the root canal was preferable because the dentist would at least give you medication. And I encouraged you not to self-medicate while you were going through the job search to just take the pain. And I'm not gonna lie to you. It can be painful to go through a job search. Rejection is inherent in the job search process. Those of you who are in sales and marketing understand that rejection is part of the sales process, and really what you're doing in a job search is selling a product, and that product is you. Having said that, I think there are ways that you can make it a lot more palatable. So again, this is a kind of a high-level view. There's some things to sort of think about, and then in the future podcast, I'm going to be drilling down on these topics. I alluded to the fact a minute ago that job boards are broken, and there's a whole lot of reasons about as to why that is, but let me just kind of paint that picture a little bit for you. First of all, I want you to think about your own current company that you work for. If you're looking for, let's just say, a top sales performer, would you rather, let's say you're in the position to make the hiring decision, would you rather look within your own network or the network of your top sales performers or the top sales performers that have moved on to other companies, would you rather inquire with them, who do they know, who can they recommend, or would you rather put a notice on a job board that everybody and their brother will see, and you'll probably get inundated with applications, many of whom will be wholly or mostly unqualified for the job, and you have to weed through and sift through and sort through all the dross to get to the good stuff. most of us would rather do the former. And so increasingly companies are using that method to find employees. In fact, there are many companies I've run across where they have a formal process. So if an employee recommends someone who is then hired, there's a bonus involved for that employee. So other reasons that the job boards are broken. I alluded to this a moment ago. It's the most competition. Everybody and their brother sees that ad and may apply to that ad. And the fact that there's so much unqualified folks coming in means that it really makes it difficult for the qualified folks to stand out. Now, that may seem a little bit counterintuitive, but the fact is there can be some frustration on the part of the person who's sifting through all of that and trying to make sense of it. Another thing that happens oftentimes is the position that is posted, they have an internal candidate in mind, or at least that internal candidate ends up being the top candidate. And so the real position that is really going to be vacant is that lower level, more entry level position that is then vacated by that internal candidate. So it's not what I call a real position that they're advertising for. Also, another thing that I've heard from a lot of my clients is they will go through the process and at some point along the way, the position becomes frozen. So either some budget cuts have happened, there's a reorg going on. A lot of times the top person in that department has moved on and they want to wait until the new person comes on board and let that person make the hiring decision. So positions somewhere along the way cease to exist, at least for the time being. So those are a couple of reasons that job boards are broken. And as I said earlier, most of my clients have figured that out. I have surveyed them about that and they understand that that is the case. What they don't know and what they come to me for is what's the alternative? If I'm not going to rely on the job boards, what else can I do? So that's when I then implement or introduce to them the idea of a passive search versus an active job search. Now, hear me say that passive searches can be completely okay. So let's say you're in a position, you're happy, reasonably. There's nothing on the horizon with the company that makes you worry. Maybe there are circumstances in your life for which an immediate job search change would be disadvantageous, not a good time. So you just want to put some feelers out. You want to look at some job boards. You're going to devote a little bit of time a week to do that. And maybe you're going to entertain some recruiters who reach out to you and at least have conversations with them. In that situation, no problem. Do a passive job search. You probably don't have the time. And frankly, you don't have the compelling reason to be more active, because an active job search is going to take you more time. There is no there's no getting around that. So when do you want to do this active job search? You want to do an active job search when either you have been terminated, you have left your employer, you've been given some sort of notice that if this doesn't happen or if this does happen, then you will be let go, or you see disturbing or concerning changes on the horizon. So a number of my clients have come to me lately with shifts that they see happening in their company that have caused them to realize that not beginning a job search now would be disadvantageous. It would be a bad idea to get caught flat-footed with what they see coming down the pipe. So the analogy that I use is a passive job search is kind of like being in the passenger seat of the car. You go where the car goes. You go when the car goes. You don't get to say, we're going to leave now. The driver does. You don't get to say where we're going to stop. The driver does. You don't get to say when we're going to arrive at the destination. The driver does. So that's the kind of the analogy for the passive search. But if you're in an active job search, you're in that driver's seat. You're determining when and where and how much and what time. And so in those circumstances where you want to be more active and more aggressive in your job search, you really want to be conducting an active job search. The next thing I want to kind of throw out at you is this concept of the hidden job market. And I think probably everybody listening to this has heard that term, and maybe you do or don't understand what it means. The hidden job market is a bit of a misnomer, so it's more realistically it should be called the unadvertised job market. And it's all of those positions out there that are, for one reason or another, not advertised. And research seems to indicate that it's, depending on which resource you look at, somewhere between 75 to 85% of all jobs are in the hidden job market. So think about that. One out of every four or one out of every five positions is advertised. Let that sink in for a minute, right? So if you don't tap into the hidden job market, first thing right off the bat is that you're missing out on one out of every four or one out of every five job opportunities. So these hidden jobs are unadvertised. Why aren't they advertised? Well, they aren't advertised for a number of reasons. I'm going to hit a couple of them and drill down a little bit in this further down the line. So the job has just been vacated. So there hasn't been time to process all the paperwork and all the decisions haven't, all the signatures haven't been gotten for that job to be posted. It's not posted because the company hasn't defined the direction they want to go. So somebody's left and it's created an opportunity for them to reevaluate the whole department. And do they want to hire someone with the exact same job description as the person who vacated it, or do they want to make some shifts? Maybe it's a small company that just didn't post, didn't get around to it, doesn't have the infrastructure for an inundation of job applications, or somebody just forgot. This happens in small companies. Large companies, it's that inundation fear. Like, they don't want 150 or 200 applications. They don't want people calling HR and asking questions. They just don't want to deal with it. And then finally, a big reason why a lot of positions aren't posted is that they don't exist. And this really gets into something I want to talk about a little bit later on, which is that idea of having conversations with decision makers about your fit for the organization. So Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great, talks about this as getting the right people on the bus. And great companies do this. My clients tell me these stories literally on a weekly basis, where they have a conversation with someone and the decision maker says, you're the right person for the position, for our company, and we are going to make a position for you. So one didn't exist. Obviously, it can't be posted anywhere if it doesn't exist. And there's two really great benefits to having those conversations about fit rather than about a specific position that's been posted. Number one, you're the only competition. You're not competing against anyone because you're not competing for a position. You're competing for fit. Number two is that whereas when a company posts a position, there's a laundry list of things they want. You know, they'll say requirements, must have, blah, blah, blah. Prefer a candidate who has blah, blah, blah. And so in that initial pass of your resume, they're really evaluating you against that wish list that they've created. That is a non-issue when you're having a discussion about your fit. And so the beautiful thing, because I've seen this happen over and over again, is that once they've decided that you're the right person for their culture, for their goals, their mission, their fit, you're just the right person, you may not have the advanced degree that they would have been very much determined to find someone who had, or you don't have a certain certification or something. It's not a big deal at that point because you're the right person. They're like, you know, we can train you to do this job. We can send you to school. We can get you that certification, but you're the right person. We want you on the bus. I see it happen all the time, guys. So if you haven't experienced this, please trust me that it happens. All right. So we're talking about having a conversation with a decision maker about your fit with the organization, completely apart from a job that's posted anywhere. To do that, you have to know three things. You have to know yourself extremely well. What is your brand? What do you bring to the table that no one else can bring to the table for them? Very clear on that. One of the things that I do with my clients when we're writing resumes is I do a lot of brand work with them, and they get very granular about that, and they recognize the fact that all of that self-knowledge that we're digging for to do the resume is completely applicable to the interview process, that they now have such greater self-knowledge that they can use as they go into the interview. So you have to know yourself. The next thing you have to know is the employer. You want to know that employer as well as the employer does, if not better. You want to do tons of homework on the company's website, on competitors' websites, on sites like Glassdoor and LinkedIn and all of those places where you can gain intel about the company. And then the third thing you want to know is how do those first two things fit together? How do you fit together with the company? What is the company's problem? How do you solve it? What is the company's mission and how does that fit with your brand and your mission? And when you can articulate those three things, you're going to have fantastic conversations with companies. Again, not about a specific position, but about your fit with the organization. So I've said that job boards are broken and a job search that is focused on job boards is likely to be pretty ineffective. I recommend that my clients spend no more than 25% of their total job search time on job boards. So if you can only afford to spend, let's say, 10 hours a week on your job search, no more than 2.5 hours should be spent on job boards. And that would include company job boards and all that online application process. All of that fits into that 2.5 hours. So the question then becomes, what do I do with the other 7.5 hours, right? Well, the bulk of your job search should be focused on networking, having conversations. And when I say conversations, those conversations can be via email, via text message, via phone, via Skype, via Zoom, or in person. They can be one-on-one or they can be networking events where you are hopefully meeting with a number of people, but you're networking. You're reaching out to people within your contacts. And one of the things that I do with my clients when they go through my job search program is I have them identify a list of their dream companies that they want to work for. So anywhere, depending on their industry and any geographic restrictions, somewhere between 12 and 25 companies. And they do their research. They find companies that are a great fit for whatever's important to them, whatever kind of culture they're looking for, whatever kind of size or revenue or mission or geographic location or age of the company or new growth plans, whatever it is that's important to the company or important to the client, I want them to find companies that can offer that. And then they have what I call a quadrant sheet for each one of those target employers. And they start by going through their network and finding who do they know relative to each of those companies. So think of this as their starting point in getting to the decision maker at that company. And when I use the term decision maker, I'm typically talking about the hiring manager. So whoever would be your manager, if it's the vice president of sales, is it the director of IT, you know, is it whatever, is it the president of the company? Who's going to make a decision to hire you? Who would be your direct supervisor? And then they work backwards from that person. And LinkedIn is the best place in the world to figure out how you are connected to that person. So let me kind of go over these four quadrants with you. And I want you to kind of picture an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper with quadrant one is up in the upper left, quadrant two is the upper right, quadrant three is in the bottom left, quadrant four is in the bottom right. So quadrant one connections are going to be those people who know the decision maker and they work at the company. So those are prime. If you think about this as almost like a bullseye, you know, with the very center of the bullseye being the decision maker, because that's who you want to have a conversation with. The closest thing to that, the next rung out, is quadrant one. They know the decision maker. You maybe see that they're connected on LinkedIn. Maybe you just know that they're connected. And they work at that same company as the decision maker. Quadrant two, they know the decision maker, but they don't work at that company. Maybe they're colleagues at another company, or maybe they worked at that company and now they've moved on. But they are connected to that decision maker. Quadrant three are people who don't know the decision maker, but they work at the company. And then quadrant four are what I call centers of influence. So these are people who know a lot of people. They're well connected. So you don't see, at least looking on LinkedIn and to your knowledge, it doesn't appear that this person knows and certainly doesn't work at that company that you're trying to get into, but they're just well connected. So I always use the example here. I live in Tallahassee, Florida, and I have a friend here in town named Dina. And Dina is so well connected in Tallahassee that I actually called her one day because I was doing some stuff on LinkedIn, and I found what seemed to be a pretty professional, connected person in Tallahassee that she wasn't connected to on LinkedIn. And I was so shocked that I had to call her. That's the kind of person Dina is. She just knows everybody. When I first came to town, she was the person who was like, you need to meet blah, 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 blah. And I set up appointments with all of them, and they have been great connections for me. Other people that can be centers of influence are people like hairdressers or masseuses or the mailman or people who just interact with a lot of people. I am convinced that nail technicians are some of the most connected people in town, because think about it. Not only do they have just a huge influx of clients, but people are sitting there, and I have listened to these conversations. They tell them everything. It's like a therapist. So think about those people in your life. And so the quadrant four is kind of the default. So you go through all of your target companies, however many, 12 to 25. You figure out, do I have any quadrant one, quadrant two, quadrant three connections for any of those? And then all the ones that you don't have a quadrant one, two, or three, who do you know? And so you go to, like in my case, if we use the example of Dina, I go to Dina, maybe of my 25 companies, maybe I've got six companies that I don't have any contacts in. And I'm like, Dina, who do you know at A, B, C, D, E, and F? And she, maybe she knows a couple of those. So maybe I have another center of influence. I go to them with the remainder of those. Who do you know? And so I'm really trying to get a quadrant one, two, or three for each of those companies that I've identified as target. So I'll drill into that a little bit more later on, but I want to hit a couple of other points and then close. And so this is so important. Figure out an organization system for your job search and stay organized throughout. You're going to be telling people things. They're going to be telling you things. You're going to say that you're going to do something. They're going to say they're going to do something. And you want to keep track of that. I don't care whether you use Excel, you put it on your calendar, or you have paper files, matters not. It's whatever works for you. But you want to make sure that you do what you say you're going to do. So if someone says, I don't have time to talk to you right now, I'm going on vacation, can you call me in 2 weeks and we'll set up a coffee date? Well, by gosh, you better have that on your calendar so that you can do that and do what you said you'd do. Finally, I want to give you the thought of being a thermostat in your job search as opposed to a thermometer. Now, that may sound really strange, but I want you to think about a thermometer. A thermometer just is, right? It measures what's already there. It doesn't affect any change. A thermometer just tells you what is happening. I want you to be a thermostat in your job search. So think about what a thermostat does. You can raise that temperature. You can make it uncomfortably warm, uncomfortably cold. You can make it very comfortable. You can adjust when you get chilly or adjust when you get too hot. But a thermostat can change the environment of the entire room. And that's really what I want you to be in your job search. It really comes back to being active as opposed to passive. So, briefly, job boards are broken. Spend no more than 25% of your job search time on that. And by the way, even if you are applying online, use your network to find people that you know at those companies that you're applying to so that you can have an offline conversation with them and hopefully move your application up the pile. So even when you're using job boards, make sure that you're also networking for those job opportunities. If you are in a time-limited situation where you need a new position within a certain period of time, an active job search as opposed to a passive job search is an absolute must. Remember that 3 out of every 4 or 4 out of every 5 jobs are not shown to the public. They're unadvertised, and your network is how you're going to get into those positions. Know your brand, know the employer, know how they fit together. Be able to articulate that clearly and compellingly so that they will see that you are the perfect fit for their organization. And keep everything organized so you know what the heck you're doing and what's going on. All right. So reach out to me, make a comment. I really want your feedback. I look forward to interacting with you guys and to sharing all kinds of great information in the future weeks. So cheers, have a great week, and thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to The Exclusive Career Coach with Lisa Edwards, CEO of Exclusive Career Coaching. It would be great if you would rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. Also, I want to be your career coach, so be sure to ask questions about your career management challenges and job search situation. Until next time.